Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You know, we do these, Carol, as you know, these Camo X profiles, and we've done many of them of very interesting people. And the first one I think I ever did was Kim Tucci. And then I think I heard a rumor late last year that you also did one, because we've recycled them. Sometimes we forget that we've done, you know, people previously. And, you know, Kim's a media guy, so he's always going to say yes to an interview. But he was the very first profile that I did, and we're going to play a part of that. He was very sick that day. We had cancer, and he was undergoing treatment, so he was having problems breathing.
Was it a year ago when you?
Oh, this was a long time ago.
It was over a year ago.
I would say it's probably... When did we start doing the profiles? 2 years ago or 3 years ago?
I'm rubbing my head right now. It's been a long time.
It might be 3 years ago.
I talked to him in December.
This past December. I knew that.
And we were in the middle of the interview, and he mentions, you know, when I was here with Mark, and I was alarmed, because what I had done was I had called Charlie Brennan, and I said, Charlie, did you interview Kim? Because Charlie and Kim go way back, right? And I said, Charlie, did you interview Kim? And he texted me back and said, no, I didn't even think to ask you or our boss.
Well, I don't know that he would have known.
Because there are so many that we've interviewed.
Fred would have known. If you ever want to quit, you know, because he's
Fred
the guy.
Fred knows everything.
Fred knows, because he keeps track of everything.
Fred Bottenheimer over there.
But I'll tell you.
Thank you, Kenny.
One of the wonderful things about the KMOX profiles, and this was sort of a priority number 10 in doing them in the first place. One, to get long-form conversations with well-known and interesting people, mainly St. Louisans. But the other is to have a record of these people.
Well, that's true.
And I think this may be the first of our KMOX profile people who have passed away.
I think you might be right about that.
And so we have this long-form record of them telling their story. And so I'm so glad. And I've been with Kim in many an event. His wife, who started Talent Plus.
Sharon.
I've worked with her for 10 years. So I know them and love them. And so this is such a loss. But I'm so glad that you and I had the chance to sit down with him in this way.
Well, you know, Kim and I bonded, I think, because of movies. And
we
knew each other pretty well because of that. He was very passionate about the film credits. He didn't like the fact that Jay Nixon took those away. And I would oftentimes on Oscar night host the Oscar party for Cinema St. Louis. Right. And Kim was on the board of Cinema St. Louis and actually invited me to become on the board at one point. And I just didn't have the time. Boards and me don't go well together because you sit in meetings and stuff. But he was very passionate about that. We would joke around. You know, I last saw him at the PGA Championship last year. We were doing the roundtable out there Friday of that week, and Jane was with me. We were walking around the course. It was really, really hot that day, really hot. And we ran into Kim. He was coming back from because I remember this very well, from the ninth green, and we were walking up the ninth green, and he was very, very overheated and out of breath. And Jane and I were genuinely worried about him because it was so hot. Look, everyone was hot that day, but Kim was, you know, obviously older. Look, he was 78 years old.
He never looked his age.
Jane had some friends who were paramedics, you know, with the Firefighters Union, and we kind of guided him down to them, and they took care of him. But, you know, it's one of those things, and now you have these regrets, and I have regrets, because I was in great touch with him for many, many years. He was on my round table for many, many years. I would see him Oscar night, and I had not really, outside of running into him last summer, you know, ever since the cancer scare and the treatment, I just had kind of lost touch with him. And now I really feel guilty.
Everybody's busy, and it just reminds you, again, if we need these reminders all the time, that if somebody crosses your mind, reach out to them at that very moment. And it's so easy now because you just have to text them. That's all you have to do.
Well, look, when I pass at some point in the future, no one's going to say that I was a St. Louis treasure, because I was not. But this guy was incredible. He really was. He was inspirational. He would always talk with you. He was positive about St. Louis. He cared so deeply. It reminds me of what Dan McLaughlin did with the soccer situation was something that Kim Tucci would have done and encouraged, because it was so important to him that this city do well. And he was obviously very well politically politically connected. It's hard to believe we even don't even talk about him related to the restaurant business because that's what he first became known from.
Well, it's so in just
well, not first, but certainly became an icon because of the pasta house. Right.
What is so remarkable to me is, and I was just an hour ago listening back to the interview that he and I did in December, and he tells the story of how he got into the restaurant business in the first place, because that's the way that I knew him. Was Pasta House sure. And his work with the Convention and Visitors Commission. And he brought me in to do some events with them. And that's how I knew him. But I didn't know the story of him prior to that.
Well, this is I'm going to play a section here. I'm going to get to it because I've been babbling
here.
We're going to get off to other stuff. But he was a big passionate soccer guy, you know, himself. And he had connections to a pretty important event in the world of soccer that related to SLU. And broadcasting, both.
And this afternoon, at about 5:20, you'll hear how he got into the restaurant business in the first place.
All right. We'll look forward to that. Let me play. This is my profile from a few years ago. I really don't even know the exact date that we did it. You might hear Kim just coughing a little bit because he had just had a cancer treatment that day.
We're playing University of Maryland in the finals at Brooklyn College. We beat Westchester first in the semifinals. Before the season began, I have to go out and meet Mr. Hyland on Hampton Avenue. With the athletic director, and I'm 19 years old, and he says, Kim, what we're going to do is the first game of the season, we want you to do a synopsis of the game on the Bob Anthony show from the Jefferson Hotel. You'll call it in. We're the national champions. We're playing Fairleigh Dickinson University, and we get beat. We're upset. 1-0. And I got to call in the game and say, this is Kim Tucci reporting for KMOX on the banks of the Passaic up here at Fairleigh Dickinson University, where St. Louis U went down to defeat to the hands of the Fairleigh Dickinson University.
Right, right.
Blah, 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 blah. Okay. We win every single game, go to semifinals in Brooklyn. Before we go, Hyland calls me up again, go down with the athletic director. If we win, we're going to do the first radio broadcast of a soccer game in America. You'll do the play-by-play.
So now you're a play-by-play guy.
And
this
I'm
is all
19,
happening very quickly,
but I'm the
isn't
trainer.
It? Right.
I said, it's in the books and that. It's in that were written. And I said, what if somebody gets hurt? Hyland says, nobody will get hurt. Just tape them up before the game. Honest to God, you know how he was.
Right.
He says, nobody's going to get hurt. So I'm sitting up in the press box. In the press box. It's held together by 2x2s. Open air, no glass. I got a producer from KMOX. From CBS in New York, and I'm doing the game. I'm getting the lineups already. Soccer really not that hard. There's 22 players interchanging, but it's not like hockey. Right?
Right, right.
So I look to my right, and I see this guy walking towards me with a cigarette in his hand, top coat on like I had, and it's Jack Buck. So what's he? So I go up to him, and he says, I'm Jack Buck. I said, I know who you are, Mr. Buck. I'm Kim Tucci. He said, yeah, listen, they send me up here to do this New York Titans football game, you know, the AFL. And now they send me to do a soccer game, and I never done a soccer game before. You're doing the color, I'm doing the play-by-play. So, okay. So I'm sitting on my left to him, producer on the right. He screws up everything. But it's radio. Nobody knows
Jack,
it.
Jack does.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't
you.
Really know what he's doing.
He never
with
did a soccer,
soccer
game before.
Right. Absolutely.
But nobody knows it. He may
right.
sound great.
Of course he did.
Except there were two kids sitting in front of us.
Yes.
And it's in his book, page 106 of his autobiography. Even though he's got the story screwed up, but it's right in there. So these guys, open air, they can hear Jack Buck broadcasting, but it doesn't match what they're seeing on
right.
the field.
So they know it's wrong.
Right before halftime, and I have to get a prop, right before halftime.
This is radio. I'll describe
yeah.
the prop. He pulls out a pen.
Well, I'm pulling out the prop is he had a cigarette in his hand.
Oh, okay.
And the guy turns around like this and says, Mister, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. And he smacks this kid with the cigarette in his hand and says, we're on the air. Boom. Oh. And the kid ducks. No. The cigarette breaks off in his hair, and it's stinking up, going out in his – I swear to my God. And the kid froze. Halftime comes. The two kids get up, and they leave. Buck, in his story, he embellishes it, and he says, I hit this kid so hard, he went all the way down the aisle, and thank goodness he didn't come back. I found out Kim can't fight a lick. That's in the book. So now,
can you even imagine if that would happen today?
Oh, he'd be sued 10
million.
Well,
right, right.
He's 36, and I'm 19. We win the national championship, okay? 25 years later, this was 1960, 1985, we had Shannon's restaurant at the time before we sold it. He called me up and said, "Hey, Toots, can you come down? It's the 25th anniversary of our first broadcast together." So I come down here. I've come down to the old studio, and we relived the whole story and told the story the right way, and he loved it. You know, he was a Purple Heart winner in World War II.
Yeah.
And so that, and then fast forward again, he's not doing well. He's got the Parkinson's. He's not doing well. And he called him and said, "Hey, Toots, you know, I was on the charter committee for the new stadium." He was co-chairman with Lou Brock and him. So we had all labor people at the stadium club because that labor was behind the stadium,
sure,
just
yeah,
like
right.
they were this
right.
time. And so he says, "Hey, Toots, can you tell the story one more time?"
He
so
loved that up, story.
I get up there, oh yeah, and I told the whole story. Told the whole story. He loved it, about how he punched the guy and macho. You know, it was great. He loved it. He went back in the hospital. It came out, and then he didn't make it.
That's Kim Tucci, dead at the age of 78 from a CamWex profile I did several years ago. He founded the Pasta House Company in 1974, but of course that story goes way, way back. Before that, you know, I can't remember, now I got to remember who this was. But, you know, as part of the film commission, Kim was involved when there were movies that came here to St. Louis before we had the tax credits ripped away from Governor Nixon. But there was an actor. Now, I'm not going to do this justice. I'm really going to have to think about who it was. But there was an actor, a Scottish actor. Dave, who's a Scottish actor? Scottish, sometimes Google is very helpful with the Scottish actor. The story's going somewhere if I can figure out who it is here. Gerard Butler came right up. I had to cough. So Gerard Butler's here filming a movie. I can't even remember what the movie is. Kim Tucci gets his picture taken with Gerard Butler. Anyone that knows Kim well will know that he carried that photograph with his man crush, Gerard Butler, in his wallet, probably until the moment he died.
The issues are there. Talk about them with Mark Reardon on KMOX.
Two, welcome back. We have an audio cut of the day coming up a little bit later this afternoon, right into Total Information PM, and let's talk a little bit more about the Mueller report and what the president called a witch hunt and a hoax for years turned out to be, I guess, exactly that, because this it's hard to really paint this as anything other than a vindication. Kayleigh McEnany from the RNC is with me this afternoon to talk about it. Hey, Kayleigh, how are you?
Hey, how are you doing, Mark?
Well, so I don't even know how to respond because I feel so badly for my friends on the left. They had gotten their hopes up so much. It was almost like if Duke would have lost that game yesterday in the NCAA tournament. I mean, everyone's assuming they're going to the Final Four and win the championship. And that was the assumption with this president in the Mueller report, wasn't it?
Oh, that's exactly right. That was the assumption. And Democrats, you know, they lied to the American public time and time again, each and every one of them. Adam Schiff, saying there's plenty of evidence of collusion. Jerry Nadler, the same thing. Tom Perez saying there's a mountain of evidence. And the list goes on and on, all the way to Beto O'Rourke saying 35 minutes beforehand that there is a clear-cut case for collusion. It was all lies. They've been exposed. And now many of them are doubling down, saying we want the full report rather than apologizing, which is what they should be doing.
All right, so what do you think about that? You think the full report will come out?
I do. You know, President Trump has said he'd love to see the full report out. Of course, this is a matter that's left up to the Department of Justice. They have to remove grand jury testimony and classified information. But the president's been saying, you know, I want it to come out. He's done nothing wrong, so why not see it?
Do you think, and I know that I was talking about Scott Jennings with this earlier this afternoon, he thinks that Adam Schiff should resign. And I think the reckless, you know, approach to this that he's taken, propped up as a media star, there have to be, I don't know. I don't even know if there'll be repercussions for him.
Yeah, there has to be some sort of repercussions. He needs to be asked, first and foremost, what is this evidence? You know, your words were plenty of evidence of collusion, and this is the size and scope of Watergate. Well, what is that evidence? He needs to be asked. I can guarantee you this. If 40 FBI investigators, 19 attorneys, and Robert Mueller, one of the most revered prosecutors in this country, found nothing, can pretty much guarantee you Adam Schiff likewise found nothing. He needs to be held to account, stepping down, providing the evidence, answering why he lied to the American people.
Isn't this something, you know, the headline, one of the headlines on a tweet from CNN was this: special counsel, and this must have really pained them to type this, Kaylee, special counsel Robert Mueller did not find Donald Trump's campaign or associates conspired with Russia. Read General William Barr's four-page summary here. That's good news for the country, isn't it?
It is good news for the country. And you'd think that every American, as Brett Baer had said, could stand up and say, hey, we are happy that not a single private individual in this country colluded with Russia to try to rig the election. Most of us would applaud that. The average American would applaud that. The only person not, or the only group, I should say, is the far-left extremists that the Democratic 2020 field are beholden to. So I don't think you're going to see too many of them distance themselves from this Russia collusion obstruction narrative. They can't afford it, or they can't survive a Democratic primary.
I asked Scott this earlier. Did you see Senator Graham's news conference this morning?
I did. Yeah,
man,
it was very good.
It was good.
Let's move on and investigate the investigators.
Yeah,
he's exactly right.
Well, that's my next question, because I feel like, you know, there's a few of us across the country, certainly in talk radio, that have been talking about some of these things with the FISA warrant. Cheryl Atkinson has done a great job as an independent journalist in trying to get some answers to that. But, you know, an informed media and a balanced media and a media that certainly investigates is very important to our republic. But this seems to be one of those issues that they don't seem interested in uncovering. And I'm just baffled by that, Kaylee.
Yeah, they're not interested in covering it. I mean, you look at the media and they completely echoed the far leftists during this whole investigation, because they were, you know, essentially an ally of the Democrats. The media was, and they've shown no interest in covering the absolute corrupt beginnings of this investigation. The fact that 8 months into an FBI investigation, you had Peter Strzok saying there's no there there. Lisa Page testified before Congress that there's very likely that we find no evidence of collusion. But nevertheless, they somehow got a FISA warrant to listen in on a campaign on Carter Page and violating his civil liberties and the Fourth Amendment, his Fourth Amendment rights. So why are we not investigating that? It's a question that I wish the media would start asking.
A separate but related topic before I let you go. And reaction to the news of our Parkway Central grad here in St. Louis, Michael Avenatti, being arrested today.
Yeah, I did see that. How ironic. You know, he spent his life and built his name after trying to go after the president on all kinds of bogus charges, only to find out that he was the one with a lot of things in his past. It's real irony there, and it's been interesting to watch the charges come out this afternoon.
Yeah, interesting to say the least. Kaylee McEnany from the RNC, always great to have you on. I appreciate it. Thanks for checking in.
Thanks, Mark.
It is kind of amazing when you think about it. I'd have to check the president's Twitter feed. I know that Donald Trump Jr., I mentioned, you know, he said Michael Avenatti got arrested, MAGA, hashtag MAGA. He did that earlier. Let's see if the president said anything. But think about it. The porn star lawyer just ripped the president, talked about collusion, talked about obstruction, talked about jail time, and he's the guy that likely will go to prison. Usually when the feds got you, they got you. I think we've learned that, certainly. Let's see. He's got Benjamin Netanyahu there, so he is busy today. Israel, White House. I don't see anything here about Michael Avenatti. There will be, though. I think, you know, this would be a good night to maybe stay up. I'm looking at this, and he has not been very active on Twitter the whole weekend, has he? Not really. Anyway, maybe like 2 a.m. one of these days, you'll see a bunch of activity. And I bet he's chomping at the bit here to do something on Avenatti. If you're just joining us this afternoon, Avenatti was, this is on two fronts. Feds in California accuse him of misusing $1.6 million earmarked for a client settlement to cover expenses for his coffee business, which is called Global Baristas US LLC. It operated Tully's coffee stores in California and Washington State, and he used that money for his own expenses. Shouldn't have done that. Then he's got the New York feds, too, and he's accused of fraudulently obtaining more than $4 million in loans from a Mississippi bank in 2014 by submitting false tax returns that showed that he had raked in millions in profits from 2011 to 2013. That's according to a criminal complaint. In reality, Avenatti had not submitted a personal tax return with the IRS in any of those years, according to the filing. And in Manhattan, they also accused him of attempting to extract more than $20 million in payments from a publicly traded company by threatening to use his ability to garner publicity to inflict substantial financial and reputational harm. And that was Nike. So the deal was that he was making threats to Nike. So this is pretty serious charges for the porn star lawyer. And I, you know, guess my whole idea, because I mentioned this earlier in the show, we've been talking about KMOX profiles and Kim Tucci. I said to Fred maybe 2 or 3 months ago, I said, you know, we should try Avenatti to do a profile. He might do it because he did the interview originally because he knew the reputation of KMOX and loved the Cardinals. And at this point, I do think that if he's given one phone call from prison, he could do a KMOX profile, or when he's in the orange jumpsuit. He might have time then as well. It's 3:30. We have much more coming up this afternoon and an audio cut of the day.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Saw Amy Marskors in here doing a little work earlier with her Stevie Nicks look about her. Dave, didn't she look like Stevie Nicks? She had her hat on and, yeah, leather pants. Got some fashion style for a sports chick, I'll tell you that. 3:37. Thank you, Mr. Springsteen. 3:37 at KMOX. I do have an audio cut of the day coming up into Total Information PM. We'll talk some hockey and some baseball and some hoops and all kinds of stuff with Chris Raby at 4:15 this afternoon. Tooling around on social media, there's one guy who allegedly lives here in town. I never see him, though, a friend of mine, and I thought, wow, this is exciting. I haven't talked to him for a while, and then I saw some news about a pretty cool project, so I thought we'd get him on. Ridley Pearson, best-selling author, great friend of the program. How are you, Ridley? Good to have you on.
I'm doing great, Mark. How are you?
Well, you know, I joke about you sort of split your time, so I don't even know if you've been here in St. Louis this winter at all or not.
I haven't been in the winter.
I don't blame
I've been
you.
Out in the deep stuff. We have 5 feet of snow in our backyard.
Yeah, you're. I can't remember. Is it Montana or Wyoming?
It's Sun Valley, Idaho.
Okay, I was wrong. No, I didn't even get the trifecta there. Idaho, which I'm sure is beautiful. You have 5 feet back there?
5 feet of snow. Finally, it's starting to melt.
Wouldn't it have been smart to maybe get a home in a southern climate and a northern climate?
Yes, I think that would have been a good idea.
Well,
when have I ever been smart, Mark?
No, I know. All right, so this is, I don't know much about this, and I reached out to Fred. I said, we got to get Ridley on because this seems pretty cool. And it's a project that is from, and you got to walk me through it. Is this part of something in association with DC Comics?
It is. So DC Comics decided that that there was a chance they were missing the younger audience, and they also decided that despite their incredible comic line, they would like to get into graphic novels. And I have never written a graphic novel until now. So they reached out to about, I think it's over 20 authors, and they divided it up into young adult line that's called Inc. and a middle grade, which is what I am, called Zoom. And they offered me the son of Batman and the son of Superman, Super Sons. So I've done my first graphic novel with this incredible illustrator named Illy Gonzalez, created a whole new world for these kids, the son of Batman and son of Superman, and brought in all sorts of issues, as you know I like to do even in my adult thrillers. This time it's climate disruption and immigration problems and problems with between fathers and sons.
Oh, dear Lord, Pearson, you got to get in all the politics, right?
Not politics. I'm bringing in issues, man.
Well,
issues.
One thing we should say here, Ridley's a guy who, and this should make people envious, but part of your job, and it's hard to even, well, it's hard to call what I do work. Okay, let's just be honest about that. But part of your job is to go on Disney cruise ships and also in the Disney theme park, sometimes at night when they're not open, to get inspiration for your stories.
All sorts of times when they're not open. Yeah, I've been in 30 times now for the Kingdom Keepers series. And in that series, I bring kids into the park when the parks are closed. And then they get onto the rides when the rides are closed and the rides come alive. And it's just tons of fun. And, And there's still a rumor out there that Kingdom Keepers may end up streaming on the new Disney Channel. We'll see. The new Disney Plus.
You would hope so. So you have two big superheroes. You get to write a book with their sons. Does DC guide you? Are there rules at play, or is it a blank slate?
Well, you know, it's a great question because when it was offered, I had to admit that I did not know much about the DC universe. I'd grown up reading Batman comics, but that was, you know, back around the Civil War and Superman comics. But and they said that's not a problem. They would sort of hold my hand. And if I was wandering away from where those characters should naturally want to be, they would help steer me back. And they did. I have a wonderful, one of the cool things about this, as you know, Mark, I write a lot about teamwork because I like to see kids learn how to work with each other. And we had teamwork doing this. I had two editors and then Illy and me. So there were four of us who built these graphic novels. And as the writer, you write a script. It's like when I write screenplays, you write this script that describes each panel. There are 700 panels, each panel in detail. And then maybe there's some dialogue in it. Maybe there isn't. But the really neat thing about learning how to do this is like the title says, graphic novel. You're learning how to tell a story visually. And it's very different. I've enjoyed it so much because you have to describe people doing things to then represent movement in the story.
So I've never been I've never really gotten into graphic novels, but I've watched shows and movies, obviously, based on them, The Walking Dead most prominently. And I know that people sure. really get into the comics. And in something like that, you want to track, you know, I think a lot of fans track whether or not there was a big episode last night in The Walking Dead, whether or not it matches up with the comics. But you said 700 panels. That seems like a lot.
In each book. Because
wow.
the book.
So in each book, and there's three books.
Right. And there's 140 pages, and you're figuring it's somewhere between 3 and 6 images a page. So it gets way up there in count.
So you're finished with all three of the parts of this?
I am. Yep.
And when is it available?
The first publishes next week on Tuesday. It's called the Polar Shield Project. And then the second comes out in November. And I believe the third comes out about this time next year. So that was part of the assignment here was I had to be able to work quickly they want to do these in groups. Obviously, we all know from middle grade readers that if you wait a year or two, they've moved on to junior high or high school or college or whatever, you'll kind of lose your audience. So, yeah, we've worked real quickly on these.
Is this set in Gotham and Metropolis or elsewhere?
It starts in Metropolis, and I move everyone to a city of my own making called Windermere, which is modeled after Chicago, because Metropolis is basically under 3 feet of water, and it's become problematic.
Ridley Pearson, this sounds exciting. You're going to have to do, and I'm not really even joking about this, you might have to do like the Comic-Con circuit, right?
I know I might. I have not been to one yet. I've been to some trade shows now for this book, and they're really fun. One thing is the other authors in both these lines, both Inc. And my line Zoom, they're big best-selling authors, both in the comic book world and in the novel world. And it's just a blast getting together with everyone. Meg Cabot of Princess Diaries is part of the group. And Danielle Page, whose book Mira is also, she's on the young adult line, and her book also publishes April 2nd. So Danielle Page and I are going to link up a couple times, I think once in Chicago, once in LA on our 2-week tour.
That is outstanding. Well, congratulations. I'm always jealous about some of the work you do. Super Sons, the Polar Shield Project, going to be available next Tuesday. You know, I always get ahead of myself on these things, but this does sound like one of those things that could lead to some animation on television or the movies in the future as well, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, they're talking about that. I mean, that's partly why they hired Illy. Illy has a very animation look to her illustrations. And I was just down there meeting with DC on Friday, and they said that their animation division really likes it, and they're reviewing it, and who knows what might happen.
Well, you've always kind of come off as a comic book geeky type to me anyway, so this is a perfect fit for you, Pearson.
I don't know if that's a criticism or a compliment. I don't know what you're doing to me there, Mark.
No, I miss you. I said that in a text, I think, a couple of months ago. I hope that we see you soon. Survive the snow in Idaho, and we'll talk soon.
You bet, man. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Ridley Pearson, best-selling author, and that's a cool project coming up here, Super Sons, the kids. I say the kids typically, but you know what? Adults love graphic novels.
Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, I spent some time on this afternoon. A sad day for St. Louis overall. Kim Tucci, the co-founder of the Pasta House Company, but that really sort of minimizes his involvement in St. Louis. Sure, he founded or co-founded the Pasta House Company, but he did so much here in St. Louis. Unfortunately, a lot of it was on the side of the Democrats and politics, but Kim was not a crazy lefty. You know, I think on many issues, he was really toward the center, but that's not what's important today. What's important is remembering really a gem here in St. Louis. He was a friend. I feel tremendously guilty. I had lost some contact with him. He was a regular for years until he got cancer several years ago on the Reardon Round Table. He's dead at the age of 78. I did a KMOX profile on Kim, and in that profile, it's going to air again on Thursday night at 9 p.m. He talked about the restaurant. We got to get to when you buy the Pasta House with your partner, though. So the financing of that is rather interesting. You borrow money from your mom?
$7,000.
That's a fair amount of money. In what year?
That was 1970, the fall of 73.
So that's a pretty good chunk of change.
And we gave $5,000 to Rich and Charlie. I'm sorry, Charlie was dead. He was in my second wedding. He was in my wedding, and he and his wife flew into a mountain in Puerto Vallarta. They got killed, and then they had it on the books, Rich and Charlie's in Baldwin. So John Farrar was my roommate before I got married to Vicky, and he said, would you like to have a Rich and Charlie, sort of like a franchise, not a real franchise?
Yeah, sure.
And I said, yeah. He said, well, you and Joe. So then Joe came in because he's a friend of Richard's. I came in as a friend of John's. I knew Joe from soccer and everything. But we each gave him $5,000, and we went to Pioneer Bank. They financed the whole, gave us $75,000. We built the first restaurant for $96,000. The other contractors carried us for the remainder $21,000. And today, the same restaurant would cost $1.6 million to open.
Almost impossible to do, probably.
And that was 1974, February 8th, we opened up. I was still teaching, and I had to teach 2 more weeks at Umsel till they got somebody to replace me. And now it's our 42nd year right now.
And that was a couple of years ago. On Twitter today, Mayor Crewson wrote, RIP Kim Tucci, loved St. Louis, our biggest booster, always positive, and he was. I don't remember. And if it was an angry conversation, it was usually about Jay Nixon in the latter years. But I loved him. I'm going to miss him. St. Louis is going to miss Kim Tucci, dead at the age of 78.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.